So we were talking about the question of a dog who damages some food by eating it or by licking it, but that has a ripple effect on all the other stock because the place gets shut down. The health ministry comes in and says, health department comes in and says, you can't sell any of this meat now that the dog has been in here. So we noted that it's been discussed in the context of at least two interesting machlokesim. On the one hand, there was a machlokes between the Rashba and the Talmud Rashba, which you can find in the Kovtzim. Some of you, I think, took a look at it this morning, where the Rashba says that yes, it's true that according to the Gemara, Neshicha is Karen, but not always. If the animal is choosing to eat it, so it's starting off as shame, and then let's say he drops it, and that's where the Hezek comes from, but that's still shame, because that was still an outgrowth of his Hana. And the Talmud Rashba, who discusses, is coming from a different girsa, but he ultimately seems to disagree, and he thinks that reverts to Karen. And we also saw a somewhat related machlokas that the Gemara in Daf Gimel, which talks about, told us of Shane, so includes in Shane tinfa peros lahanaso, if you dirty fruits, the animal rather, dirties fruits for its own hana. So hana, there's the shame connection. But how exactly did he do this? So according to Rabbeinu Hananel, who's also on the daf here, he relieved himself on it. That was the hana, or rather it was a lack of tsar, or a relief of tsar, literally. We're not just using it euphemistically, but that's the literal focus here, was the relief. But according to the Tosfos Sanz, no, that can't count as shame because there's no hana from the nezek. There's no hana from the fact that it was on the peros. It could have been anywhere. So we have to assume that it was driven by the peros themselves, so maybe the animal was cooling itself off on the peros or the like. So if it's not going to be shame, let's say the relieving itself case, so what's it going to be? So there comes out, according to the Tosfos Sanz, to be a regel issue. Or tolda a regel. It's rars. So that's interesting that we have these different possibilities. So to go to the Talmud HaRashba and say that it's Karen, so that brings up our original issue. So doesn't Karen have to be Kavanah Lahazik? Where's the Kavanah Lahazik here? And in addition to that, the whole question of Mishunah and what role that plays becomes important. And so the Gemara on the end of the first parak sounds like Mishunah is the issue for Karen. You saw the Tosfos that brings that in. If you look at the Nemuki Yosef over there, it says all the more so that Mishunah is the defining element. So what happened to Kavanah Lahazik? And what if you have a situation where you have a little bit of both, or you have a mixture? Let's say it's no Hana, let's say there is Hana, but Kavanah Lahazik. What do we do with the snake, for example, who we've assumed there is hana when he bites, as the Rashba explains? But that's presumably Kavanah Lahazik. He's trying to hurt someone. So there is an interesting discussion about this, if you want to look it up, in the Shiurim of Reb David Povarsky. Reb David Povarsky, one of the great Rashi Yeshiva of Panevish. So his shiurim on many masechtas are published and available on HebrewBooks.org. So he says, bottom line, what's the story? Is it Kavanasa Lahazik for Karen, or is it Mishuna? And what if you have something that's a mixture? Yes, sir.
If we're going to put more weight onto the Kavanasa Lahazik, into the Mishuna, it seems like, from what we've seen for sure from the Gemara, from Tainus on the Nachash, that it's way more on Kavanasa Lahazik, because we're saying there's no way that a snake can ever not be. The snake always has
a big thought. Well, I think what you're saying is the snake is always mu'ud, according to the Mishnah.
Yeah.
So if he's always mu'ud, so doesn't that label what he does in a certain way?
Right.
The problem is that what's not clear from the Mishnah, and what's subject to machlokas, is he's mu'ud how? He's mu'ud in what category?
The Kavanasa Lahazik, it seems like.
Right, but what does that mean? What av does that make it? It's good that you're asking this, because it's a good opportunity to clarify this. Right, when we talk about, this is really important. This is good to clarify. When we talk about,
I have to just
please. When we talk about Kavanasa Lahazik, right? So when we talk about Muad as a distinguishing factor, so it sounds like we're talking about Karen, right? Because that's where we have the two stages. We have the turns from Tam to Muad. So it sounds like it's a Karen issue. Right, so when you start using language like mu'ud, like, oh, okay, we're talking about karen. But it's not 100% clear that's the case. So when the Mishnah in the end of the parak introduces this idea of things that are mu'ud mitchilaso, the animals that are inherently dangerous animals, and therefore we treat them as born mu'ud, so then maybe that's not called karen. Right? Because maybe karen is Mishuna, and these are not Mishuna, they're acting normally.
By definition, it can't be Mishuna if it's Mu'ad.
Right, maybe. Right? So maybe, if that's the key definition, right? If the key definition is that Karen is Mishuna, then the whole concept of Mu'ad Mitzchilaso is not Karen. So what is it? So then maybe it is Shane, or maybe it's Regel. You could make a case for either, but it could be Shane or Regel. This is acting normally. Yes, Sam.
Didn't the Gemara on Yud Tes though sort of say that that even though it's Mishuna, like the part of it could be Mishuna, but the way the animal eats might not be Mishuna, therefore
it could be. It could be half and half, I'm saying, in terms of, let's say, you could, an action, like you're referring to the Gemara, let's say it eats the bread basket.
Yeah,
with the bread inside of it.
It seems off, but
right.
It's not out of the realm of imagination.
So what it means that the bread part is not Mishuna? And the basket is Mishuna. So you could judge each one differently. So you might ask a question, if you think about this, just trying to keep your focus on the logic behind things. A question about that?
Yeah, similar. And Tosfos brings up that Mishuna is kind of underneath Karen.
Mm-hmm.
Are we now saying that Karen is Mishuna?
Well,
and
that's
so, how exactly
right. That's where we see a little bit of a difference in Rishonim.
Right,
could be that it is Mishuna, and it could be that it's Kavanasa Lahazik.
So, how would we understand if Karen is Kulo Mishuna?
How would we understand if Karen is defined by Mishuna?
Yes.
How would we understand which part?
What we said about making it wouldn't be Karen. It would be
right, which it means that those things of Mishuna would not be Karen. Right, we mean that those animals that are inherently wild animals are not Karen. Yeah.
Conversely, then, if it's defined by Kavanas Lahazik, then all of those things are Karen, because those are all
right.
Kavanas
Lahazik. Right. Right. So that could be subject to that difference. Now, Rav David Pivarsky discusses the question of ultimately what is it, and he makes a few points. And again, if you want to look at it inside, his farm, this one, and I think all of them are available on HebrewBooks.org. Shirei Rav David Pivarsky. It's very, very creative, very creative title, right? If it was an art school book, it would be called "David Pavarsky on Shira," on Bava Kamma. They have it. Okay, whatever. Anyway, sorry.
Chance the edition.
Yes. Okay. I mean, not to make fun of them or anything, but whatever it is. I mean, there's different attitudes towards how much effort has to be put into title creation. And
sorry,
whatever it is. Anyway, yeah. Okay, so fine. So the Shiur of David Pafarsky. So he discusses which one is really, and he makes a couple of points. One that leads into another. Says first of all, so let's say you have something which is both Kavanasa Lahazik and there is Hana. Right? Certainly conceivable that you could have a mixture of both. So which one is it? So he understands that you probably should look at it as which one is causing what's happening. Which one do you need for this to have happened? Because usually there's one gorei. That even if the animal gets hana from being mazik, did he do it because kavanasa lahazik? Or was it the other way around? That he did it because of the hana, and in order to get his hana, the kavana was lahazik. So it starts off saying that that's a reasonable way to determine what it is. You know, if it was driven by his hana, it's shein, even if it's also definable as kavanasa lahazik. And if it's driven by a kavana lahazik, it's going to be called a karen, even if he also gets hana from it. But then, building on that, he essentially suggests that really, and this is similar to something we've seen already, that these are really two opposite sides of the coin. So essentially, it's one or the other. Because why do we care about kavanasa lahazik? If you think about it, especially because we're talking about animals, right? So what's the significance of kavanasa lahazik? Why should it matter? Are we assessing guilt here? It's like a hate crime?
We're assessing intention, which defines action, maybe.
So what does that mean?
To go back to the case that we used yesterday as an example, that if an animal is just stam neshicha, then I understand that it's that's a ma'aseh mazik. If it's trying to eat something, then that's a ma'aseh.
Okay, you're bringing in some extra ideas, which are very helpful. Sam, you want to say something like that? Okay, Daniel? So in terms of
if we care if it's kavanas lahazik, then perhaps that we need to dish out something more than just a din mamon
for the animal.
Yeah, din knas.
So the knas is going to reflect the animal's intent.
I'm sorry.
The knas is going to reflect the animal's intent. It's interesting. I wonder. I have to see if we have any support for that. It's interesting. But it would seem on the surface like we don't really care about the animal's kavana. You know, you mentioned the hate crime, you know, that, so there is a lot of debate in America about hate crime legislation. That the assumption is that if somebody murders someone else or beats up someone else, so then they're subject to whatever punishment the law provides. But if it can be proven that they did so because of anti-Semitism or racial bias or something like that, so then it's a hate crime and the punishment is enhanced, the punishment is more. So there are those who argue, you know, why should that matter? The guy is just as dead or beaten up one way or another. You know, why should somebody be less of a problem because he wasn't motivated by, if you just hate somebody and you beat him up, so then you're only chayev this much, but if you hate him because he's Jewish, you're chayev more. Why should that necessarily affect the treatment? There are answers to that question, but it's part of a general debate. But that's all assuming you're dealing with human beings where there's something to talk about in terms of their motives. If you're dealing with animals and the liability of the owner, so it's in two places. Right? One, whether it's shaykh to judge the motive of animals is itself a question. But on top of that, why that should affect what comes out of the owner's pocket is a further question why that should matter. So presumably, it's really about something else. It's really about Mishuna. And Kavanasa Lahazik is an indication of Mishuna. Essentially, we're trying to figure out, is the animal doing something which is part of its teva? If it's part of its teva, so then that's shein and regel. or is it doing something which is not part of its teva? And that kavanas lahazik essentially would be a default kind of category, that this doesn't accord with anything that it normally does, and therefore that should be called keren. So essentially it's kind of one or the other. So the idea that it's going to be both kavanas lahazik and hana, it's not really shaykh, because essentially they're mutually exclusive terms once you define it that way. I lost track of whose hand is up first, so we'll just read it like English. Okay, Zanny.
What would be a nafkamina then?
Nafkamina, well, nafkamina of a case. If you have a confused case, it has both elements, so then right. We have to figure out is it one or the other, and then there are all the nafkaminas such as Rishos HaRabim and Chantzi Nezek and the like. So that could be significant. Daniel?
I got a little lost there in the bet after talking about whether it's a part of the animal's teva or not. If it's teva, it's shin regal. So where is Kavanas Lahazik?
So Kavanas Lahazik, essentially, the way he's understanding it, is kind of a miscellaneous, I'm trying to think if that's the right word for it. It's basically an exclusionary category that was saying that if it's part of its teva, so then, okay, that's what we call shein or regel. Shein is what you're inclined to do for your purposes. Regel is more just the way you go about the world, but they're both natural processes. So kavanas lahazik, it's defined as something which is not that, basically. It's defined as something which we can't explain it based on shein kind of things, and we can't explain it based on regel kind of things. So we call it kavanas lahazik. And kavanas lahazik, then, that's called karen.
Even if you have animals that are muad mitzchila.
So then maybe not. Then maybe muad mitzchila is not karen.
So maybe in that case, kavanas lahazik would be considered shame.
Right. No. So then in that case, muad, however you want to call it, it's not really called kavanas lahazik, right? Because it's really the definition is really based on mishuna, and kavanas lahazik is a way of saying that it's mishuna. Because it means we can't explain it by any natural process. And therefore, these animals that are naturally dangerous are going to be labeled shein or regel. And again, what confuses us a little bit is because muad, we're used to assuming muad is tam than muad, which is a process of karen. And the muad mitchilaso maybe is a different usage of the word. It's not a karen concept. It's a shein or regel concept. Hi.
And
an unusual way.
Kavanas lahazik is an inherent characteristic of an animal. It's not something that an animal can then acquire. It's different than being muad. Meaning.
Well, no. So it means he does something that's unusual. But then, if he does it enough times, then it becomes muad.
But if kavanas lahazik.
Well, so I was thinking something that was
as an indicator, essentially.
Right. It was something. Oh, so that's interesting. We'll get to that. God willing, the whole discussion. It's actually also like a seasonal. I want to try to get it in before we get too far away from Sukkot. Maybe we'll stick it in next week, whether we're up to it or not. The question of whether there is a lumdus there to that question you're about to ask. The question of when you label an animal muad, is that because really we now know that he always was this, and we didn't know it until we saw the pattern? Or do we assume he somehow changed his nature? That by doing this again and again, he used to be a tam, but now he turned into something else.
But what Rav David is saying is that it's essentially kavanas lahazik is an indicator.
Yeah, kavanas lahazik is an indicator. It's basically a way of saying it's not its normal, natural process.
So he's saying, what if kavanas lahazik and hana coexist? And he says, they can't.
Right, because basically when it's hana, we explain it based on the hana. If the motivation is hana, so then that's going to explain it.
Which would in turn not make an animal muad necessarily.
Well, an animal would be muad if it does something unusual.
The nature of an animal, that's the point, is that it's a different nature. If it's kavanas lahazik or if it's hana.
Well,
the animal's thought process is different. One of them is to be distracted and one of them is to is the game.
I mean, that if he does something three times, that's shame oriented, you're saying?
Yeah.
Right, but then he might be muad to begin with, though, because if the animal is naturally dangerous.
Right, but if he's muad until us, then we have the.
Well, you don't have that whole process of counting three times. It's just treated that way all the time.
And it might not be karen.
Right, and then it wouldn't be karen, according to those Rishonim. So, this has a couple of interesting implications. One is, just as a Lamdusha point that Rav Varsky mentions also, which I'll just ask you to keep in your pocket in case it can explain other things. So it comes out that really Keren and Shein and Regel, when you focus on these things, are different by their nature. That basically a animal that damages through Keren is a mazik. And that could affect how we understand certain things. It's considered to do a maisa hezek. It does damaging things. While an animal that damages through Shein or Regel is not a mazik. It's just going about its life. But nonetheless, it also causes hezek while it goes about its life. And we see that there's sometimes a liability for hezek that you cause, even when you're not trying to hurt anyone. So whether that makes a difference, it could. It's just helpful to keep that in mind. There's a fundamental difference then in the labeling of Karen versus Shein and Rego. Yes, sir. Accidentally what?
I'm saying it used its horn, just like, let's say it had its head down and it bumped into an apple tree, I don't know, and took off 10 apples with its horns. Like, isn't that also, why that be so different from Shane Rego?
It may be not, it probably would be like Rego. It's going about its way and it happens to bump into something.
Right, so I'm saying, are we prepared then to go into this, you know, discussion with the premise that Karen has to be distinctly different from Shane Rego?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that works though for what you described. You know, that because like we've been discussing with the abstract terms, so Karen doesn't mean horn in the sense that it doesn't mean that anything it does with its horn is going to be called Karen. So if it's just walking around and happens to through its horn knock over the apple tree, so then that probably be Regal. Okay, is your hand up over here?
I just got to ask another question.
Okay, awesome. So if you're thinking about the kind of Tameha mitzvos here, so there's an important point to maybe clarify for a second, because something will come out very strange. So it requires some explanation. Think about all these parts together. Right? So we said Shein and Regel. Let's say, you know, a nice peaceful cow that happens to eat some grass in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, or happens to step on some stuff in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Is Pater, right? Shein and Regel is Pater Bershus Rabbim. Now, remember, we discussed the other day, why is Shein and Regel Pater from Bershus Rabbim? Yeah, Daniel? Right, essentially, that's what the Rush basically says, right? That even though you could say it's a Pasuk, you could say, because the language by Shein in the Pasuk is Ubir B'sadeh B'sadeh Acher, that it does this damage Davka in somebody else's property. But as Daniel points out, the Rush gives a reason for it, that it's just simply natural that this is what's going to happen when your animal is walking around in the public thoroughfare. And animals are allowed to walk around in the public thoroughfare. You're allowed to take your cow through the streets. We don't see it so much in New York City anymore, but you know, once upon a time, that's the normal thing to do. So if you think about that, so now think about what we said about today, about this Muad Mitchilaso situation. So if you're going to label dangerous animals, the ones that are called Muad Mitchilaso, if you're going to label them as Shein or Regel, what nafkamina does that have? Pretty big one. Means that damage, sorry?
It seems that damage in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is expected, but you're still Pater.
Okay, essentially you're kind of mentioned both parts, right. That essentially that damage is Pater in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, right? So you bring a dangerous animal into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you're going to be Pater. And according to the Rush, why are you Pater Shein Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? Because, you know, people are allowed to bring their cows into the street. So you're telling me people are allowed to bring their lions into the street, and whatever happens, happens? People are allowed to bring their snakes into the street, and whatever happens, happens? Does that make sense?
That's not as problematic, because the rush right to the roof is svarim, so we can just go back to the pasuk and say, uh-huh.
Okay, but you know, we'd rather it make sense, right? You know, we'd rather be able to relate to it. So, yeah, Sam?
Is there like different implications for if you bring the rooster's rod and the dead certain things? Like, if it eats food, that's understandable, but if it like kills a person, you know what I mean?
Well, what about for the purposes of what the Mishnah is talking about, right? The purpose that it's calling a mu'ad for, if we're going to say still that the damage liability is under the category of shame or ego, so then you're going to have the Patur of Rishos HaRabim, it seems. And the Patur of Rishos HaRabim is all based on the assumption that you're allowed to be doing what you're doing. And that's pretty strange, right? Especially, let's say, if you have a shor nagchan, if you have a shor that has been established as a muad, so now we say you're chayiv even Rishos HaRabim, because you shouldn't bring your shor muad into Rishos HaRabim. So why should that be any different for the animals that are muad mitzvilaso? The muad issue should apply equally to both. It should knock out the Rishos HaRabim tour. I can't bring my known violent ox into the public streets, and I shouldn't be able to bring my lion or my tiger into the public streets either. So this is discussed in the Svarim. For example, the Rav Bloy. Familiar with the name Rav Yishaya Bloy? So that's a good name to know. He passed away probably 10, 11 years ago. He was the author of many Svarim that are on Halacha. I think Yoni, you were seen this morning next to a Chovas Hadar, I was asking about. Right, so maybe one of the more well-known Svarim is the Chovas Hadar on Hilchos. Sounds like it's a pun, because it's a Chovas Hadar on the Mezuzah and Menorah issue, both involved Dor, but that's not what he meant. The Dor is a resident, right? The Chovas Hadar. So he wrote a lot of Sfarim LaHalacha. He wrote a Sefer on Shatnez, and a Sefer on Chala, and a Sefer on Ribbis. But he has a Sefer that's many volumes, very kedai to have, especially if you're learning Bava Kamma and things like that. It's a Sefer that's many volumes long. It's about 9-10 volumes. We added some later. Called Pischei Choshen, where he goes through all Choshen Mishpat Inyanim in a very systematic, bottom line kind of way. So he discusses what's going on here. So you can bring your tiger into the streets, and we have this logic that, oh yeah, you're allowed to bring your tiger into the streets, so whatever he does is to be expected. So he assumes that we have an interesting kind of paradox here. It goes to the last line of this Mishnah, the Mishnah on Tezvav and Beis, that there's a difference between those that are B'nai Tarbus and those that are not. That we must be talking about a trained animal that is trained to play music and also trained to act in a safe way. So therefore, yes, maybe it is legitimate to bring that animal into the streets, because due to its training, you can rely on the assumption that it's going to act safely.
So it doesn't matter which animal it is, as long as it's trained.
Well, I guess it means that animals theoretically, well, the Mishnah says that snakes are out of this category, but that other than that, that yeah, you could have a trained lion or tiger, and they could be in that category, that it would be understandable to bring them into the public.
But if it's not, Shane and Rego is going to be B'nai Tarbus, meaning that...
Sorry?
That you could have an animal that's more difficult and still be Shane and Rego.
Yes, that's where the paradox comes in. So that's interesting. There's a kind of a steer here. So he's saying, essentially, that's what it means to have a trained animal. There's a difference between an animal that is naturally peaceful and a dangerous animal that is trained. And he has to kind of really balance on the edge of a coin here. And that essentially, if such an animal does do damage, that's still its nature. That's still orchayu. Lamaisa, it was born a violent animal. But at the same time, the training is enough that it's understandable for you to bring it into the Rosh Hashanah.
Even if it's not
right, that,
it,
that an animal, that's for this category, an animal that by its species, by its nature, is a violent animal. So there is now a new status of a trained violent animal. A trained violent animal is different than a naturally peaceful animal. In that it has these contradictory aspects to it. On the one hand, if it hurts someone, well, what do you expect? But on the other hand, still, you're allowed to bring it in because you can rely on its training. Personally, would I be comfortable with that, walking on these streets? No, I would not, but I always feel uncomfortable in general, like when the dog owners tell you this violent, terrifying, humongous dog with teeth that are bigger than you, and he says, oh, it's okay, he doesn't bite. And I'm glad he's confident he doesn't bite, but you know. So like, what happens when he eats me? And then the guy says, well, I guess he does bite. You have to rely on his guarantee of the training. I personally would still be a little nervous about this, but that's essentially how he tries to explain this idea, because otherwise, logically, you know, we don't want to just revert to the pasuk and say, well, it's because they're so accustomed that we don't understand it, for we can somehow relate to it. So that's essentially how he balances those two contradictory things. Now, were we able to call it Karen, so then, okay, then it would just have the same status as a Shormuad, and it would be easier to understand.
Is he assuming that all animals are going to be B'nai Tarsus? Because what if you have one, so it's not trained?
So then you should...
Still, that's an animal that's still, assuming it's in Shin Rego,
right,
doesn't have his Svara, why would it have the Torah for Shosara? Let's say I have a lion that's not trained.
He's saying, so I bring the lion out into the...
Is that what he's saying? He's saying that you need to make it a B'nai Tarsus, that it needs to be a trained animal? You have
so that's it. Right, that's an interesting question, because otherwise, so then how exactly, it seems like it's still going to be subject to the Patur of Shane.
Yeah, I thought when before I finished saying what he said, I thought that it was, that he was going to go in that direction, and he's saying that all these animals need to be, every Ubud Piklasa needs to be trained. Then it loses that once it's trained. But what if you have one?
Right, that's an interesting point. I think I'm going to reserve the right to think about that a little bit more. It's an interesting point. Okay, so now with that, let's consider another case. And here, I don't know if we'll finish today or not, so it may carry over a little bit into next week. But we'll see. I don't want to make any promises about how far we'll go with this. But let's say the scenario is as follows. This is discussed in this farm. Say somebody's walking around the public streets and he's yelling at people for whatever reason. Kanoisha reasons, whatever other reasons they may be. And he yells at one store owner, and it somehow happens that the dog that belongs to the store owner jumps up and attacks this guy. Coincidence. So you could say that somehow the store owner sicked his dog on this guy. Or you could say maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But what's the story here? So let's assume in this situation the store owner says, I don't know why he bit this guy. I mean, he doesn't bite. He's like a short Tom. He is a completely docile dog. And the bitee, he says, no, it's not true. I'm not an aggressive person who attracts dog biters. Clearly, this is the way this dog is, and it's the store owner's responsibility to realize that this dog is like a lion. This dog is a dangerous animal which should be treated as mu'ad mitchilaso. And with that, there's a couple of other elements here. So what exactly did this dog impact on? So by chomping into this guy's arm, let's say, so he damaged his suit, and he also damaged his arm, and he had to seek medical attention. What do you think are the potential perspectives on this situation? What would you say? Sorry?
Is a dog in that list of animals?
Well, the Mishnah, and before that, talks about, or it talks about dangerous dogs. But it's not necessarily the case that we're going to have to be bound only to this list anyway.
Is that list not an all-inclusive list?
That's probably the assumption. Which is the store owner's argument, basically, right? He's saying, "Yeah, it's not my dog. My dog, he's a perfectly peaceful dog. He doesn't bite people." Yeah.
If that's the case, then it would seem that in that case, you can say that because of this, not something the dog does, or you can say that. The fact is that it's something that's ingrained in the dog to do this, to attack someone when this is something like this is happening, which would theoretically make it taba.
Right, which are the two sides here. So the store owner is basically voting for what? He's saying, how should this be seen? Right, and therefore...
Putter.
Right, well, therefore, putter, why?
Because you can't...
Well, so that I have to figure out. So let's take it slowly. So if, let's take it from the perspective of the Baiti, right? What's he arguing here? He's arguing that, no, this is what the dog does, right? So therefore, what category is he advocating for?
Shane
Regal. Shane Regal, presumably. He's saying this dog is like the... what's listed in the Mishnah, he's like a lion or a leopard, and therefore it's a Shane Regal situation. The store owner is saying, no, he doesn't normally do this. Therefore, what is it? It's Karen. So, essentially, because he's saying it's a Karen kind of thing, and he's saying it's not something he's done before, so then he's arguing to essentially be putter, or maybe Chatzi Nezik. While the Baiti is arguing, no, I want the whole thing, because I'm saying that he's a Mu'ud Mitchilaso kind of category. There's no Chatzi Nezik here. Right, that's what's driving their arguments. Right, each one is taking their side because they assume it'll favor them. And the dog owner is saying this is not his normal thing, so therefore it should be viewed as Karen. And the Baiti is saying, yeah, it is his normal thing, therefore it should be viewed as Shein Erego. Now, there's an interesting quirk here, which Svarim point out. You see, each one thinks that they're arguing in their own interest, but they're also arguing against their own interest. Can you figure out why? Yeah?
If it's Shein Erego, then he's putter.
Exactly. Right, so the Baiti, he thinks he's so smart, saying, oh, he's naturally this. So then, wait, but then maybe it's Shein Erego. If it's Shein Erego and this happened in the street. Right. So then he would be putter. Now, how is the store owner arguing against interest? So, because once he says that it's Karen, so if he'd agree with the other guy and say it's Shein Erego, then he could get off the hook because of Rosh Hashanah. But because he's saying it's Karen, now he's bringing himself in the possibility of being Chayev. So it sounds like Chatzi Nezek. So now the question is, all right, so you'll say to me, so Chatzi Nezek, we don't do Chatzi Nezek anyway nowadays. Right? That's something that we discussed the other day. Right? That if we say Chatzi Nezek is a Knas, so then we don't adjudicate knasos in chutz la'aretz and without dayanim smuchim. So what difference does it make? The truth is, it does make a difference, because practically speaking, even if Beis Din cannot compel it, there are ramifications, because it could be, for example, that he should pay a lotzeis l'day shamayim. So if the person wants to do what's right, and there is theoretically a half nezek kas here, even if Beis Din can't compel it, or if, let's say, he wants to come before Yom Kippur, to go back to our previous topic, he wants to come before Yom Kippur and say, listen, be mochel me for what happened, then the victim should have the right to say, I'll be mochel you when you pay me, when you compensate me. So even though Beis Din can't adjudicate this, it could be that it exists on some level to be utilized. Also, what about the medical bills? Is there a chiyuv for the medical bills? So here I put on the leader Makoros, that if it got up to it, right, that who pays medical bills?
Only people.
Only people, really. So Adam Hamazik, right, the Torah tells us about the five Dvarim that an Adam who is Chovel somebody pays. But if your animal is Chovel somebody, he doesn't pay the extra four. So that's also going to be a factor here in this whole discussion. And then it's an interesting question about whether on that there is the aspect of Lotzei Sudei Shamayim or not. Within, in general, even if it was a direct act of a person, so within the five things, there is a discussion which of them are in the Knas category and which of them are in the Mamun category, which are in the Shchiach common category and which are not. So there's a lot to figure out about which of those are still dealt with by contemporary Bat Din. But in this case, it seems probably like you don't have a Chiyuv Min HaDin for the medical bills because the damage was done by an animal. Daniel?
Maybe going a bit too far back, but if we're going, this is all under our logic of that, perhaps that only the Mishnah would be considered Karen. But what happened? But what about our original understanding of that? A Muad would be like versus Tom versus Muad in terms of Karen. That technically the dog could be a Muad here if you say.
Right. Yeah, you say
that
it could be.
That is what dogs do, and then you'd be chayv din mamon of nezek shalim the enters a rabbi.
Right, that could happen, although that neither one claims, or because the owner for sure doesn't claim. The owner says no, it's never happened before, or it happened once before, you know, so he's not going to say that there is a shor muad status, and the baiti. He's not claiming that it's been proven. He's claiming that it has a muad mitchilaso status. So you're right. Theoretically, if you could give it a shor muad kind of label, then it would be Karen, and that would be more absolute.
If the dog has bitten before, if this was the first offense, and this could be considered a different mishuna, with the dog's then second offense, give it a din. A shame muad, or would that also
after be three times?
After three times, right?
Right, so it could be on the way. Okay, so now I gave you some sources to see also today, if you got up to this, which also addressed the question of what about mishasa? If you sick a dog on someone, so are you liable for that? And do we suspect that that's what happened here? So here, it's an interesting discussion what exactly the story is. So maybe that's a little bit of a longer discussion. So maybe we will leave that for tomorrow we have Parsha, and Sunday we'll have other things. But maybe on Monday we'll pick up with that and then move on to a few other interrelated things. So just to quickly review the main things that we spoke about today. So we... recap a little bit the two machlokas in between the Rashba and the student and the two deis and the shita mekubetzas. And we talked about the question of, all right, so where exactly does kohanos lahazik and mishuna come in each one? And with Rav David Pavarsky's discussion, where he made a couple of points that presumably whichever one was the mover is the definition, not the one that just happens to be there. So if it was motivated by Hana, it's going to be Shane. If it was motivated by Kavanos Lazik, it's going to be Karen, even if there were aspects of the other. But then he goes on to say further, they're really, they're kind of mutually exclusive, because essentially what we mean by Kavanos Lazik is we can't explain it through natural things like Shane or Regal. And it's a way, essentially, of saying Mishuna. And therefore, you're not really going to have them both coexisting, because they're essentially mutually exclusive terms, and Karen is really defined by something that is Mishuna. And he noted also that a Karen is an animal that is Mazik then, and a Shane Regel is not an animal that is Mazik, it's an animal that's just living its life, but there's still a liability because, or theoretically a liability, because it's going about its life caused a Hezek, but didn't do a Maisa Hezek. And then we talked about how there seems to be a logical surprise here, that if we say that normally an animal is pater b'shin v'regel b'shus harabim, as the Rush explains, because that's normal derech to do, and you can't be expected to stop that, and according to the Rishonim, that an animal that's dangerous and is labeled as muad mitchilaso is also in the category of shein and regel, so it's going to come out that you're saying you're allowed to bring a dangerous animal into Rishus Rabin, just like you're allowed to bring a peaceful cow. So that's hard to believe, and as Pesach Choshen explains, presumably what's going on is that we're talking about the Bnei Tarbus, so it's a trained animal, and nonetheless, if it does end up doing something, it's still reflective of its nature. So we have a somewhat paradoxical coexistence here, that on the one hand, it's safe and trained, and therefore you can bring into Rosh Hashanah. On the other hand, it's still naturally dangerous, and should it act that way, that would still be considered its regular teva. And then we talked about the question of this guy who was yelling at somebody in the storefront, and the store owner's dog ends up biting him. So they argue as to what exactly is the status here. The store owner says that it was unusual, i.e. Karen, i.e. I should be Potter, and the Baiti says, no, this dog is always this way, therefore it is usual, therefore it should be Chayiv. Even though they're both arguing against their interests, because if the Shein Regel is going to be a Potter because of Rishos Rabin, and therefore also the storekeeper shouldn't argue with that because he needs the Potter of Rishos Rabin. So we considered those various angles, and then we got up to the question of Mishasa, what happens if somebody actively encourages a dog to go hurt someone? So what exactly is the liability there? And that's a question for potentially two parties. Let's say if somebody sicks the dog of another person on a third person, so are there liabilities for the sicker? Is that a word? The one who does the sicking, so is that something that you are chayav for in the world of Nezikin? And what about the owner of the dog? Can the owner of the dog say, look, until this guy came and provoked him, nothing ever happened, so I'm not liable, it's his fault, or at least he's subtracted from my fault, because it's only due to his psychology that the dog ended up doing anything. So God willing, that we will have to pick up with. Who would like to daven milcha for us? Do we have a volunteer? Dan, you look like you're volunteering. All right.